Okay, a good Ner of Shabbos. This week is Parshas Korach, and the title of today's shiur is The Influence of the Wife. So we actually have three different wives who, in the various Midrashim and Meforshim, make an appearance in this week's Parsha. So we start with the one that probably you all are familiar with, Own Ben Peles' wife. Now, Own Ben Peles was involved in the dispute. He was one of the people who were in dispute joining Korach's camp. And yet, later on, he's not mentioned when it comes time for the punishment, when they get swallowed up by the earth. He's not mentioned. So what happened to him? So the Midrashim fill in the blanks in the story. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin, on Kuf Tes Amud Beis, says as follows, Omar Rav, Rav says, On Ben Peles Ishto Hitzilaso. On Ben Peles' wife saved him. How did she save him? Well, first she had an argument. Omrele, she said to him, My nafuch omina, Imar Rabba Ant. Imar Rabba Ant Talmida. Imar Rabba Ant Talmida. Why does it matter that you should get involved in this dispute and champion Korach's leadership one way or the other, you're going to be second. It's not like you're going to become the leader. So now you're a student of Moshe and Aaron. And if Korach wins, you'll be a student of Korach and you'll be subservient to him. So she argues that basically you're caught up in something that will bring you no benefit. So he agrees with her. Amalah, Ma Evid, but what should I do? Havoi be'etza v'shtabi li b'hadayu. We all were together in a conspiracy, and we swore an oath of loyalty that we wouldn't back down. So she said, I have an idea. Amarle yadana dekula k'nishta kadisha ninhu. I know that the congregation are holy people. Dechsev kikola eda kulam kadoshim. That was Korach's actual quote, that we are all holy. They are holy people. So I'll take care of it. So she has a plan. What's her plan? Amarle, she says, Tuv, sit back. I'm going to save you. And what does she do? Ashkise chamra. She gives him to drink. Va'arvise. And he gets drunk. Va'aganise. Gavoy. And she has him lie in the back of the tent or the hut. I don't know what they stayed in the Dor HaMidbar, but whatever it was, she had him stay there. Now, even though he made an oath, right, since he didn't really know what she was doing, basically passively he violated the oath by sleeping through. That's one possibility. I suppose also, if she got him drunk enough as what they call Shechruso Shalot, if he got as drunk as Lot was when he was made drunk by his daughters. So halachically, someone who's that drunk has a din of a shota, he's pater from mitzvahs. Maybe you shouldn't allow yourself to get into those situations, but the fact of the matter is if a person reaches a state of shechus or shalot, they are in fact not chayev for what they've done. So anyway, I'm not exactly sure what she did over here, whether it was just having him sleep through passively or made him kishechus or shalot, but basically he was disabled and unable to come and join the conspiracy. Now, people came for for him, and they were coming by the door. Well, that was her answer too. So let's see in the Gemara, what did she do? Osva albava, she stood by the doorway, visatarta lamazie, and she undid her hair because women covered their hair. Or had it wrapped up in such a way, covered and wrapped up. But she undid that whole do, and basically her hair was revealed. Called Asa Chazia Hadars. Anybody who saw her and they saw a woman with uncovered hair, they turned back. So even though these were rebels and they were doubting in the prophecy of Moshe, but they were Kedoshim, they were holy people. They saw a woman with her hair uncovered. They couldn't even engage her and talk to her. They just turned away right away. So that was her strategy. And then the Gemara says, "Adahachi v'hachi ivluhu luhu." And as enough time went by, enough delay went by, the group of rebels were swallowed up by the ground, and Oun ben Peles was spared. So we see sometimes it's a good idea to listen to your wife. Now, Oun ben Peles listened to his wife in two ways. First, he listened to his wife that she made a very good argument to him. She said, why are you getting involved in this dispute when it'll bring you no gain? Because either way, you're going to be subservient to the leader. No one's going to elect you the leader. So he listened to her logic, and then he also allowed her to cleverly plot his way around the oath that he gave. Just parenthetically, why wasn't he Mater Neder? Maybe he could have done that. So I don't know for sure, but there is such a thing as Neder Haldas Rabim. If you make an oath with other people's dependence on other people's awareness as well and consent, then you're bound and you can't be Mater Neder. So maybe that was their oath. But his wife found a way out for him. Halachic, not halachic. It was enough to get to save his skin. Now, it's interesting, just by the way, another interesting by the way is that Rav is the one who says this, that one should, that his wife saved him. Rav himself had a lot of difficulty with his wife. The Gemara in Yevamos on Samach Gimel describes the great pain and disrespect that Rav suffered from his wife and took it very good-naturedly. It's a very interesting story, not for today, but you could look it up. Both Rav and Rechia had their difficulties. Okay, but that's a situation where some of the players in this week's parsha listened, Oun ben Peles listened to his wife and was successful. Now, the Rabbeinu B'chaya on this week's parsha brings a Medrash Mishlei that mentions two other wives, and these two wives caused difficulty for their husbands and were their downfall instead of their success. Let's take a look over there. So the Medrash Mishlei says as follows, and again, you could find it pretty easily in Rabbeinu B'chaya on this week's parsha at the beginning. Amar Rabbi Shmuel, Amar Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Shmuel says in the name of Rabbi Levi, Shnei Ashirim Gedolim Hoyu Ba'olam. They were two very wealthy people in the world. Echad Yisrael v'Echad Bumas Olam. One a Jewish person and one from the Gentiles. Korach v'Yisrael. Korach was a wealthy man amongst the Jews. V'Haman v'Umas Olam. And Haman was a wealthy man by the Gentiles. And both of them had one more thing in common, despite their great wealth, which was Shnehen Shamul Nishehen V'Naflu. Both of them took the counsel of their wives, listened to their wives, and that was their downfall. Korach Shamal Ishtav V'Nafal. How? Ketzad. How do we know that Korach did this? So the Medrash is as follows. Keshev Bambi based on Medrash. So he came back from learning. He was learning the Torah that Moshe had begun to transmit to his people, and Korach was obviously a very learned person, and we saw a holy person. So he comes back from learning. Amar lo ishto, ma halacha chidish lachem Moshe beveis hamedrash. So what did Moshe teach you today? What new halacha? Amar lo pirsh lanu ma'isa tchelis. So he explained to us how the tchelis works. So then basically she said to him, I don't get how this works. You explain it to me. And then he explained it to her about, you put the one blue thread on. And then she made fun. And she went and she made a whole talus out of tchelis. And she gave it to Korach. And she said, well, here's a whole talus with tchelis on it. And then that was part of the way that Korach went and made fun of Moshe and made fun of the mitzvahs. The story about he was wrapped in a talus, and he said, this talus is all tchelus. Why do we need one string of tchelus? We can have all tchelus, which some people understand metaphorically is referring to all the Jews are holy, not just one person, not just one thread, Moshe, but all the Jews are holy, whatever the case may be. According to this medrash, Korach's wife was the one that incited Korach and led him down the path to rebel. And then the medrash also talks about Haman and how Haman's wife advised him to fight against Mordechai and how to do it and to erect the gallows. Anyway, the point is we have a little bit of a process problem, which is that, you know, what are Chazal advising? You've got one Chazal that seems to be saying, take your wife's advice. Take your wife's advice. Look what happened to Owen Ben Pelas. He was going to be all destroyed like the rest of them and swallowed up in the ground. And, you know, it didn't happen. Why? For two reasons. One was she convinced him that the whole idea was ridiculous. And two, she found a way for him to escape his commitment. So here they're telling you, go listen to your wife. And then we've got these other two stories where very wealthy and successful people, so obviously they knew what they were doing, they listened to their wives, Korach and Haman, and were destroyed. Right? So what's the real advice over here? So you could say, well, they're really not giving you advice. They're making an observation. You could say the Chazal is saying, look, there are times where you should listen to your wife, and there are times where you better not listen to your wife. And so they're simply observing. So that's a possibility. We can consider that. We can consider that that's all this Chazal is saying. It's telling you, listen, you should consider listening to your wife. One person listened to his wife and was very successful. Another person listened to his wife and wasn't successful and was destroyed by it. But usually Chazal have more to say, have a bigger message than just that, because there's probably just as many equal number of incidents where somebody listened to their neighbor or somebody listened to their child. So, see, you have to think that something deeper is going on over here. So what really is going on, right? Well, again, what do you listen to your wife? Do you don't listen to your wife? So we have to really delve into this and think this through carefully. One interesting point that we should consider is there's a famous psychologist and researcher. His name is John Gottman. Some of you may read some of his books because they've become very popular. But in his research, he researched married couples over a period of 20 years, dozens of couples where he recorded them for hundreds of hours, had them just like carry out their business and would record and video them. And then he would analyze those videotapes scientifically and try to tease out different traits and qualities that these relationships had and patterns and styles of relating. And what he found was, and then he would look at, let's say, the couples that stayed married versus the ones that got divorced and tried to see if there were any common factors. And one of the things that he found that was very interesting was something that he called the influenceability of the husband. So, and not the wife, very interestingly, the influenceability of the husband, meaning that he found that in the relationships that succeeded and people were able to stay married, the way in which that happened, one factor that many of those relationships had was that it seemed that the husband over time and at times was influenced by his wife and corrected. So, like, let me give you an example from my own life, right? That I used to not necessarily think it was so important. It was a very good example because it actually brings up many, many relationship issues. The way I was brought up, right, my father always taught me, tzadikim omim ma'at vosim harbe. You don't say a lot. You do a lot. You don't say a lot. So if you do a mitzvah, or you plan, and especially, he says, especially if you're planning on doing a mitzvah, you don't talk about it. You just do it. He says, because if you talk about it, the Satan overhears, and then he's going to find a way to stop you. So that's how I was brought up. So, you know, anytime you did something, you wouldn't brag about it. And if you intended to do something, especially if you intended to do a mitzvah, you wouldn't detract from the energy of the focus by talking about it, but you would just do it. And, you know, after I got married, so my wife said, you can't do that. You got to tell people. You got to tell me, because I want to feel good about what you're accomplishing. And, you know, when you're raising the kids, you have to tell the kids. Otherwise, they're not going to know. So, maybe you want to be humble and all that, but you really can't be humble on the chesed of the family. So if you did a chesed that day, you got to come home and tell the family about it so that they're inspired, or if you had a good day in learning or whatever it is. So, you know, that's a very important point she made. And even though I'm married 25 years, you know, even though still there's a part of me, it's very, very hard to talk about, let's say, something I did, because I really was brought up to do it differently. I happen to agree. I think she's right. So that's an example, right, of the influenceability of the husband, that your wife comes in with an idea. She has a notion. She has a thought about how things should be done. And that in time, the man adjusts his style and adjusts his value system to take into consideration her views and her values and her priorities. Now, what he found that was interesting was, and he very specifically called it the influenceability of the spouse, because it wasn't that the husband always had to agree with the wife, and it wasn't that the husband always had to do things the way that his wife wanted. So it wasn't like saying, and one time I heard a schmooze from a Rav who, I don't want to say his name because I'm going to say something negative now, but in this schmooze, he said, you always have to listen to your wife. You always have to listen to your wife. No, you don't always have to listen to your wife, because sometimes your wife could be very wrong. If he means by listening, agreeing, which is what he meant in his context. You don't have to agree, and you don't have to do what she wants. You do when you should listen and consider very carefully what she has to say, and be open to adjustments, even if, let's say, you have one way of doing things that seems perfectly viable. If she has another idea which seems also very viable or offers advantages, it's worth considering trying to do things her way. And that's what Gottman found in terms of the influence, in terms of what he called the influenceability of the husband, that if the husband was basically open to influence by his wife, and at times, and not even always, at times be able to adjust and grow and make his style or his priorities more along the lines of what his wife expresses, that the relationships thrived. So that's a very interesting point. And also very interestingly, the reverse was not true. In other words, in his studies, he did not find that the wife had to be influenceable by the husband. Now, this is not Torah Misinai, so I'm not telling you that this is right or this is wrong. I'm just telling you that his studies showed that it was not a factor in improving marriages. And again, he did this scientifically. So in his analysis of all these videotaped hours of these couples, in some cases, he saw couples where the wife was very influenced by the husband. In other cases, he saw where the wife was not influenced by the husband. Regardless, there was no correlation in the success of the marriage, whether that happened or didn't happen. Now, you could theorize why, but that's irrelevant because it's just a theory. But the evidence bore out that that's what it was. But if the men were influenceable and the men began to modify themselves to a degree more along the lines of their wives' priority in some areas at some times, not all the time, that would be a predictor for a successful marriage in Shalom Bayis. So, bringing us back to Ohn ben Peles and Korach and Haman, I think that the point here is that you don't necessarily slavishly follow everything that your wife says. You don't have to be a henpecked husband. But what is very important is to listen very carefully and be very open to the influence and the ideas that your life has, and that by doing so, you have the opportunity to, you know, gain perspective and have things pointed out to you that you wouldn't normally understand. Now you have to also still make decisions, right? And maybe whatever she's saying is destructive or harmful, like Korach's wife or like Haman's wife. You got to hear that. You got to hear that and take a step back and politely decline to take her advice. But you have to listen very, very carefully and be open to that influence. So Owen Van Pelis, his wife said something very logical to him, and it made a lot of sense. And then she had a solution to the problem, and he followed it, and he was successful. So how did that, you know, come down to real life? Well, I think that you know, many of us are married. Some of us are hoping to be married. Whatever the case may be, maintaining shalom bias is a critical klimaxic bracha. It's very, very hard to succeed in anything, whether it's ruchnius or it's gashmius, without having shalom bias. And there are many things that go into not having shalom bias, for sure. For sure, for sure. Many, many things that don't go into, you know, that go into not having shalom bias. However, this is a very big piece. This strategy, this commitment to allow yourself to listen very carefully and be open to the priorities and values of your wife, even if, let's say, you have a different point of view, and even if you think that you're right, as long as you think that her advice or path is not harmful. So if you're open and willing to take suggestions, this will accomplish a lot of things. First of all, it gives you the opportunity to be saved from many mistakes. And, you know, I can testify personally to how many times, by listening to my wife, my skin was saved. But I will tell you, there are definitely times where I know that if I listened to her, it would have been a disaster. So that's interesting, right? So that's what I'm saying. You don't obey slavishly, but you really listen with an open mind. But there are definitely times where I gain perspective, and even if I had good reason for doing things my way, her way was viable. I went that way, and we succeeded. So first of all, there's perspective. That's very important. But also, it creates a great feeling of respect and love. A person loves to be listened to. A person loves to be respected. And, you know, Mechabedes Ishto Yosmi Gufo, we have a tremendous obligation from Chazal to honor our wives, to give them that, to give them honor and respect. And this is a wonderful tool to do so. I'm going to shut off the recording and open up the mute ability for people to talk if they want to talk.